Part 1. 1. Evil and God. Dr. Joad's article on God and evil in The Spectator last week, 31st of January 1941, suggests the interesting conclusion that since neither mechanism nor emergent evolution will hold water, we must choose in the long run between some monotheistic philosophy, like the Christian, and some such dualism as that of the Zoroastrians. I agree with Dr. Joad in rejecting mechanism and emergent evolution. Mechanism, like all materialist systems, breaks down at the problem of knowledge. If thought is the undesigned and irrelevant product of cerebral motions, what reason have we to trust it? As for emergent evolution, if anyone insists on using the word God to mean whatever the universe happens to be going to do next, of course we cannot prevent him. But nobody would, in fact, so use it unless he had a secret belief that what is coming next will be an improvement. Such a belief, besides being unwarranted, presents peculiar difficulties to an emergent evolutionist. If things can improve, this means that there must be some absolute standard of good above and outside the cosmic process to which that process can approximate. There is no sense in talking of becoming better if better means simply what we are becoming. It is like congratulating yourself on reaching your destination and defining destination as the place you have reached. Melantolatry, or the worship of the future, is a fuddled religion. We are left then to choose between monotheism and dualism, between a single, good, almighty source of being and two equal, uncreated, antagonistic powers, one good and the other bad. Dr. Joad suggests that the latter view stands to gain from the new urgency of the fact of evil. But what new urgency? Evil may seem more urgent to us than it did to the Victorian philosophers, favoured members of the happiest class in the happiest country in the world at the world's happiest period. But it is no more urgent for us than for the great majority of monotheists all down the ages. The classic expositions of the doctrine that the world's miseries are compatible with its creation and guidance by a holy good being come from Boethius, waiting in prison to be beaten to death, and from St. Augustine, meditating on the sack of Rome. The present state of the world is normal. It was the last century that was the abnormality. This drives us to ask why so many generations rejected dualism. Not assuredly because they were unfamiliar with suffering, and not because its obvious prima facie plausibility escaped them. It is more likely that they saw its two fatal difficulties, the one metaphysical and the other moral. The metaphysical difficulty is this. The two powers, the good and the evil, do not explain each other. Neither Ormuzd nor Ahriman can claim to be the ultimate. More ultimate than either of them is the inexplicable fact of their being there together. Neither of them chose this tête-à-tête. Each of them, therefore, is conditioned, finds himself willy-nilly in a situation, and either that situation itself or some unknown force which produced that situation is the real ultimate. Dualism has not yet reached the ground of being. You cannot accept two conditioned and mutually independent beings as the self-grounded, self-comprehending absolute. On the level of picture thinking, this difficulty is symbolized by our inability to think of Ormuzd and Ahriman without smuggling in the idea of a common space in which they can be together, and thus confessing that we are not yet dealing with the source of the universe, but only with two members contained in it. Dualism is a truncated metaphysic. The moral difficulty is that dualism gives evil a positive, substantive, self-consistent nature, like that of good. If this were true, if Ahriman existed in his own right, no less than Ormuzd, what could we mean by calling Ormuzd good, except that we happen to prefer him? In what sense can the one party be said to be right and the other wrong? If evil has the same kind of reality as good, the same autonomy and completeness, our allegiance to good becomes the arbitrarily chosen loyalty of a partisan. A sound theory of value demands something different. It demands that good should be original and evil a mere perversion. That good should be the tree and evil the ivy. That good should be able to see all round evil, as when sane men understand lunacy, while evil cannot retaliate in kind. That good should be able to exist on its own, while evil requires the good on which it is parasitic in order to continue its parasitic existence. The consequences of neglect